6 consecutive years, HPR has been awarded the top 4-star rating by Charity Navigator, the nation's largest charity evaluator. What does that mean to you? Well, it means your donation to this nonprofit will be well and wisely spent. There's just a few days left to make your smart and tax-deductible gift for this year, so go online or call us during office hours, select a monthly sustained giving plan, and you'll be making the most impact for years to come. Best of the season.
The dominoes continue to fall in the nation's ongoing sexual harassment scandal. Most of the focus to date has been on the famous, from Harvey Weinstein to Al Franken to Matt Lauer, but their stories have generated a new focus on what's closer to home, with every indication that sexual harassment has always been a fact of life for American women. Have the scandals of recent months pushed society past a tipping point, discarding once and for all the long-held attitudes that made sexual harassment in the workplace possible? In recent days, we've seen the beginnings of a backlash. Many of the firings and forced resignations we've seen are based on charges that, however credible, have not been proven. So the question is raised, in our zeal to stamp out a cancerous social problem, have we lost sight of due process? We're asking our listeners to weigh in with those and related questions by calling us at 941-3689 on Oahu, or 1-877-941-3689 on Neighbor Islands. Joining me and my co-host Catherine Cruz in our studio are Elizabeth Fujiwara, an attorney at Fujiwara and Rosenbaum, who specializes in civil rights, employment discrimination, and whistleblower protection. She has more than 2 decades of trial experience handling employment law, discrimination, civil rights, and labor law cases.
Ken Lawson, co-director of the Hawaii Innocence Project and an associate faculty specialist at the William S. Richardson School of Law in Honolulu. He has served as lead defense counsel in more than 100 criminal trials and now teaches classes on criminal procedure, criminal law, professional responsibility, and evidence.
Mita Chesney Lind is a professor in the University of Hawaii at Manoa College of Social Sciences, chair of the college's Department of Women's Studies. She specializes in criminology with a focus on crimes involving women and girls.
Again, those numbers to call are 941-3689 on Oahu or 1-877-941-3689 on the Neighbor Islands.
Mita, you and I talked on this show a couple of weeks ago and addressed a question that I mentioned earlier about has society passed a tipping point? Mm-hmm. Do you think it has?
Well, I think we're at a very interesting social moment. One issue that I sort of want our listeners to think a little bit about is the difference between allegations of sexual assault, which are criminal in nature, and which involve, basically a physical assault on a woman's body and some forced sexual activity. That's sexual assault, and that's the criminal phenomenon. And some of the allegations involving Weinstein and others fall into the sexual assault category. Then we have workplace sexual harassment. Now, that's a separate and civil environment that we find ourselves in. And that's, I think, a murkier kind of social environment because that's where you talk about it's an employment situation, what are the elements that we're talking about here. And again, due process applies in both cases. And so I think that is a good place to start. But then we have to get into the weeds and talk about are our institutions robust enough so that when victims do come forward, there are protections in place for them and also for the people that they're accusing of having engaged in wrongful behavior.
Are they, Liz? Are our institutions robust enough?
Many are not, especially in the private sector. It's a huge problem here in Hawaii. We just finished a federal case where a general manager was fired after he supported women who were clearly sexually harassed. In that case, the Human Resource Department was completely complicit. However, at the University of Hawaii, I think we have a better situation. And I think now with this post-Weinstein moment, more women students would be willing to come forward as well as faculty. So it just depends which sector you're talking about. I think in the government, the state government, we have major issues. We have had lawsuits there on sexual harassment. And also in the city and county of Honolulu, we have an ongoing sex discrimination case which involved sexual harassment, but it was too long ago to bring it as a claim. So I think Hawaii has a lot to learn, and I hope that with the post-Weinstein moment, both in the private and the public sector, the managers and the head of the institutions will realize that women have been fearful to speak up, and now hopefully they'll have courage to do so. But at the same time, we need to be, very cautious that the people who are the alleged perpetrators have their rights in the due process area. We don't want it so that it becomes a witch hunt. Mm-hmm. They need to have evidence presented to them. They need to be able to explain it.
Ken, have we left due process behind in some of these allegations, some of the stories that we're hearing?
I think it just depends. You know, when we look at Tavis Smiley.
The PBS talk show host.
Right. You know, and he's saying it was consensual, that he had consensual relationships with people that worked for him. And I think, you know, it is time for us to have this conversation, what's appropriate and what's not, because if I'm your superior, is my advances to you consensual, or is your willingness to partake in those that affair consensual, or am I using my position in a sense to take advantage of you? So I think that, you know, all the employers, private and public, will have to have a conversation about what's appropriate. You know, when I was coming up, man, you know, when I was in high school, right, if a girl told me no, a lot of times it's like, well, she's just playing hard to get, right? So, you
exactly.
know, so you would at least try two or three more times, right? Now, you know, now that can be considered harassment,
better,
right?
Run.
I mean, my wife and I met in high school, right? Mm-hmm. Had I went off her first, no, we wouldn't have five kids
right.
to this day. You know what I'm saying? So,
neither did the Obamas for that.
But where do you draw that line? What processes do? Mm-hmm. You know, as has been pointed out, if you work at the university or for the state, the Constitution kicks in, right? Due process has to take place. But for private employees, unless it's in your contract, you had will employees.
Let's play that a clip from Tavis Smiley. This is the PBS host who was fired rather abruptly, and this is his story.
PBS investigators refused to look at any of my documentation, refused to talk to any of my current staffers, refused to give me the names of any of my accusers, and refused to give me any semblance of due process. It is clear that this has gone too far, and I, for one, intend to fight back.
Liz, had you run into that particular story?
I think what happens here is that the employer is at fault for not presenting the allegations in a way that the alleged perpetrator can address them. Because if an alleged perpetrator is presented with evidence, he can explain, as Ken just mentioned, if it was consensual or if it wasn't consensual, why wasn't it? Was it welcomed at first and then turned down later? There are a lot of gray areas in this area of harassment, especially if the person was a supervisor. If it's a coworker, then usually the employer needs proof that it they knew or should have known that it went on. In Hawaii, we have what's called strict liability. If it was a supervisor and it wasn't consensual, then the person is usually in trouble if there's a supervisor.
What is the statute of limitations? You brought that up before.
Right. Under federal law, for a charge under the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, we have a joint agreement with them, so it's 300 days. Under Hawaii law, it's 180 days.
Wow.
But, exactly, wow. What happened in the 90s, we put together some legislation where we found that so many victims weren't ready to do anything yet, so we changed it to 2 years. If you don't go through the agency, so then you can still bring a civil suit in any Hawaii court within 2 years of the alleged harassment. Many states don't have that. They just do it through the agency.
Mita, there are a great many reasons why women don't complain, right?
Oh, it's often terrifying. And I think, as Liz pointed out, if there's a tipping point, one of the elements of it that's the most amazing to me as a woman is that suddenly we're in a situation where women are being believed. Before, it was the case that if you did bring whatever you had together and try and speak out publicly, you were immediately attacked. And usually your reputation was attacked. And this is true whether it was sexual assault or sexual harassment. It was your character that was on trial. You had to say that you're not a homewrecker, you're not a slut, you're not, you know, any of these things.
We called it the slut defense.
Yeah, and that's essentially the way women were discredited in the past. We've had some high-profile cases at the university where, unfortunately, our union, in fact, did go after the character of one of the young women who filed against a university professor. And the union spent a lot of money doing a private investigation on her background. So we don't have a sterling record. One of the things, though, about the workplace, and the university has just cleaned up its act on this, now if you are in a kind of faculty relationship with a student, there is no appropriate consensual relationship anymore. Basically, you have to, as a faculty member, remove yourself from that supervisory or that power relationship in order for you to have the relationship with the student. So that's a huge course shift. I'm pleased to say our university president wanted that to occur, and he's very supportive of a clear and bright line. A lot of workplaces, though, are not teacher-student. As Liz points out, it's murkier. These are consenting adults. You're not talking about, you know, very big age differences like you are on most campuses. Then it's tougher, and the employer needs to. But I think increasingly, because these women are, as we said earlier in the other show, 1 in 3 women have experienced this phenomenon in their work life, and 1 in 4 employees has seen this behavior. So it's a huge social problem in workplaces, and employers have to get up to speed on how they're going to manage these cases and not do the old shuffle it off to HR and force her into arbitration where she has to remain silent and take a payoff, which is the old approach, if that.
We're asking listeners to call in and weigh in on this, and we have a caller online. Michelle from Honolulu has a story to tell us. Michelle, are you there? Michelle, I think we might have lost you. Hello? Guess not. Anyway, Matthew from Hilo is a clinical social worker. Matthew, can you hear me? Well, the phone lines are dormant for the moment.
Hello, I am here.
Okay, here. Go ahead, Matthew. Tell us what you got to say.
All right. First off, my name is Matthew Britton. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I'm a forensic specialist with a sexual background. I did my practicum at Kulani Prison working with sex offenders. So if I had my magic wand, what I would recommend is that employers in Hawaii and everywhere, really, have a system of education of employees and staff, the entire workforce, actually, so that they know that any allegations of sexual misconduct or sexual activity, you know, sometimes there's wanted and appreciated sexual advances that lead to, you know, marriage and all that. But anyway, so that the perpetrator knows when that is not wanted, the alleged victim makes a documentation early on so that there is very clear communication between the two involved parties so that there can be movement forward either in a positive or disciplinary fashion. In this way, then there is evidence that is being built for a case later on if the harassment continues, which sometimes, unfortunately, it does. But as a forensic specialist who knows about the, you know, evidentiary process, it's very important to gather that evidence early on and build it in the unfortunate cases where a perpetrator continues on with unwanted activity, even though he or she knows it's unwanted.
Matthew, thank you.
You know, he's using the word perpetrator, and I think a lot of this stuff, again, sexual assaults aside, right, you know, there's a communication, and again, I think employers have to start, you know, communicating with employees on setting up, you know, better understanding of what is workplace harassment. And so, you know, whether or not it's a female coming onto a guy or a guy coming onto a female or whatever you want to call it, I don't see them starting out as perpetrators, right? It could just be innocent. You know, I think the way you're looking at me, you must be attracted to me. I may be totally wrong. You know what I mean? Totally out, right? But that's just what I believe. And so if I start having a conversation like that, I don't consider myself a perpetrator at that point, right? Yeah. I'm just a guy trying to get it on with a girl. You know what I mean? That's
just, well, there's got to be room for misunderstanding.
Right.
Right, exactly. I think a lot of it, too, that we found when people talk about training, they've done studies. And with training where it's just done by computer, on the website, the internet, those have been found not to be effective, almost not at all. What is recommended is in-house training by knowledgeable people who can show examples and ask questions with the audience. And they found that that's more effective than just something on the internet because people can just pretend they're looking at it. And I think in the case where there is an alleged perpetrator, that the employer lets the rest of the workforce know how they handled it in a general way so they know that the employer is taking these cases seriously. What we have found in our practice, if the employer would have responded early on, done a prompt and effective investigation within the first week to 10 days, and then found out the story from both sides, and then if there was a misunderstanding, and there often is, the alleged perpetrator could explain what happened and apologize. And the employer could apologize also for having a totally ineffective training process or complaint process. Mm-hmm. And that's what women want. People do not want lawsuits. People do not want to have to come to lawyers. We are not fun people. You know, they just want it to be taken care of. They want to be able to do their job. And the alleged perpetrator wants his story to be told and say, okay, that will never happen again. I now understand that that's not welcomed because there is a lot of gray area in the workplace.
Mm-hmm. But you look, you know, the NFL channel just suspended numerous NFL sportscasters and announcers, right, based on the allegation. And I think what, you know, getting back to your initial point, what's scary for employers is if someone makes the allegation, what should I do as an employer? If I don't do anything immediately, right, then I could be on the hook for a huge lawsuit coming from an attorney and a plaintiff. And so when I look at what the NFL channel did to what happened to Tavis Smiley also on PBS, and that's what he's saying. It's like, listen, there was no due process here. As soon as someone said I did this, right, you conducted a secret investigation and not a thorough one, and I'm suspended, and my reputation is now out there. Mm-hmm. And you can't put that back in. And that's what's – so I think employers are afraid now, mm-hmm. right? And it really is, it's bringing us to a point where we have to have conversations such as these.
Well, employers should be afraid, but they need to do their job. They need to investigate. And as I mentioned earlier, they need to talk with the alleged perpetrator.
Now, I'm not disputing they shouldn't be afraid. What I'm saying, though, is when you become that – when you allow fear to say to Tavis Smiley, you're out of here without a thorough investigation, when you allow fear – because you should be afraid, and you allow fear to tell other analysts, right, without any evidence, you're out of here. Mm-hmm. That's where fear starts running instead of common sense mm-hmm. and thorough investigation. That's my point.
I agree.
That's the pendulum we're talking about, swinging too far the other way. We want to bring listeners in on this discussion. The numbers to call are 941-3689 on Oahu, 1-877-941-3689 on the Neighbor Islands, and we have a caller on the line, Michelle from Honolulu, with a story about how this has affected her. Michelle, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah.
Okay, back in the, I believe it was late 80s, right after workplace harassment policies became legal issues, I had to deal with a harasser at work for months, to the point where I would wake up in the morning with my guts in a knot. Mm-hmm. And I told nobody for the longest time because mm-hmm. I was afraid I was going to lose my job instead of the man who was harassing me. Mm-hmm. It was totally verbal, and it was completely inappropriate. There was nothing consensual about it. Mm-hmm. Till one night, I finally went to my husband, and I told him what happened and what was going on, and he said, you take care of this or I will, which meant he was going to come to my job and make trouble to this man. And just so happened, the very next day, I went to my boss, told him what happened. And not even a half an hour later, this man is coming into my office. My boss had just stood up and was standing behind the door because he wanted to go through the same door I wanted to go through. And this man looked at me like I was fresh meat within earshot of my boss. And he says, I have something here for you that'll make you forget all about that man at home. My boss's eyes got big as saucers, and he says, I will take care of this. He apparently went to this man's boss that day. The next day when this man saw me at work, he turned tail and ran, and he never said another word to me again.
Michelle,
but you know what? If there hadn't been a witness, I don't know what I would have done.
Michelle, let me ask you something. As you said, you endured this for months. What kind of things held you back?
Fear that I would lose my job. Fear that he would say, "Oh, it was. I was just fooling around," or she wanted it, because that's what perpetuators always do: is say it's consensual, that she wanted it, she was the flirt, it's her fault. And all I wanted to do, like the woman said on the last show that was on, all I wanted was to be left alone and do my job. I told this man, I'm married. I have no interest in you. Leave me alone. And he kept pursuing me.
Michelle, thanks very much for calling in. Too many stories just like that, aren't there?
Yeah, and again, you know, I think that's the position that a lot of women find themselves in is, you know, who's going to believe me, right? And you know, especially when you're talking about an old boys network, you know, if you have, and I don't know why it is that we still have a problem with paying equal pay to women, et cetera, but when you have such an unequal workforce, it's scary.
What do you tell people who might work, let's say, for a hotel, who have to deal with unwanted advances from guests? And you're in a situation like that where the hotel is trying to look out for the guests.
That's a big problem. If they have a union, they should tell their union right away. And the hotel is responsible, for what we call third-party sexual harassment. So if a customer is harassing the hotel workers, the employer is responsible. And what happens in those cases, we always recommend if the person keeps definite notes in a spiral notebook. So there's no question that they kept, we call it contemporaneous evidence, that they reported it. They, like a who, what, when, like a bad movie script. Who said what? How did it happen? What did they do about it, if anything? But we always ask that they immediately report it. But as it has been brought out, some people are afraid of losing their job. That's why if they're union workers, they should tell their union immediately. And then nowadays, the unions are more sympathetic than before. I am very much in favor of unions, but I find that oftentimes we have the old boys network in unions, too. So sometimes they need a lawyer to call them. And they shouldn't have to hire lawyers if you're a union worker. Your union should be there for you. And after they've reported it, if it happens again, then they might consider bringing a charge against the employer through the Hawaii Civil Rights Commission or the EEOC.
And you know, when you have stuff like the President of the United States saying that some of these things are just like locker room talk and stuff, you know what I mean? And almost like normalizing this, it continues to perpetuate that type of environment. And even from a, you know, after the OJ case, right, anytime you brought up racial discrimination, you were playing a race card. And now you see if anybody brings a sexual allegation against a man, now you're playing a sex card.
That's good.
And it's always being made to make it seem like, you know, somehow you're only saying it's just to get your way. You know what I mean?
Kind of the way people use the term conspiracy theory to debunk whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
To debunk the real conspiracy.
Can I just back up? There was a couple of things that, one, I want to commend Michelle for having survived through that and prevailed, and to commend her courage. Matthew earlier talked to us about the need for employers to engage in prevention, and I think that's really important. I mean, you want to have the employers signaling to their employees that this is a serious issue, here are the procedures, and this is what you need to do. So there's less excuse about these gray areas because everybody's on the same page. This is a workplace. Yeah. This isn't a late afternoon cocktail hour. So you can kind of say this is appropriate, this is not appropriate. And then I think Liz really talked about once this starts happening, the need for the victim to basically start keeping a record and make it very clear that it's unwelcome and try to tell people and be as consistent and as thorough as they can be, because that's the evidence that you can then take to your supervisor or your employer, whomever. And then the last thing is, if human resources is not available and not credible in your mind, you do have the Hawaii State Civil Rights Commission, and you have the EEOC.
You got Liz.
Yes, and we have good attorneys in town who for decades have been champions of women who are the victims of this. So I'm really proud of Liz and the work she's done. But it's also the case that our employers are getting better. I would say that at the university, and I'm glad to hear the hotels are. Remember, this is a tourist economy, so a lot of women's work is sexualized. And This is another problem we have as a community. A lot of my students go off at night and wear skimpy outfits because their employers require mm-hmm. them to do so. Mm-hmm. And so that's another area that we need to consider as a sort of special burden Hawaii faces in terms of sexual harassment in the
Good
workplace.
Point.
It's true. I think another issue as far as evidence is nowadays we handle cases where there have been texts from the alleged perpetrators. So we urge everyone to keep the texts and do screenshots of the texts also, and also do recordings.
Hey, Liz, let me ask you this question real mm-hmm. quick. Let's say that I don't want to harass anybody on the workplace.
Right.
So now I'm away to the Christmas party, mm-hmm. which is
Ooh,
this
dangerous.
Weekend, the firm Christmas party.
Right.
What do employers tell employees that are going to the Christmas party and having a few drinks?
The employers are still liable, and they need to let their staff know that part of the Christmas party is part of the workplace. And so there cannot be sexual harassment even at the Christmas party. And nowadays, a lot of employers are not having after-hours Christmas parties. They're having lunches with no drinks.
Yeah.
It is
yeah.
a problem.
Yeah.
You know, because people get a little loose and happy.
Let's go out to lunch
drinks,
or whatever.
Right.
You know what I mean? So,
it's true.
You know, that sort of tells you something about its roots in the culture, because traditionally the office Christmas party with a nod and a wink is talked about as places where, you know, somebody says something inappropriate to somebody else's missus. And, you know, we, as I say, we look at that as almost a comical event. And yet, you know, any kind of intrusion into another person's person is, I mean, we've yep. forgiven that, I guess is what I'm trying to say, as a culture, by that sort of slightly mocking perspective on the Christmas party.
Right, and a lot of men unfortunately think it's like their chance to get to the woman when in the normal environment they don't have that so-called chance.
I think this is where the employer can take over and look at these kind of past traditions and say, does this pass muster now? It's like the you know, we can talk about the race issues in the past. Maybe people in the past thought it was funny to, you know, say certain kinds of things or engage in certain kinds of behavior that now we would clearly label as racist. So as a society, I think we begin to look at things like the Christmas party. We have our professional societies, and they have these evening events with alcohol, and the students are often present. I've avoided those for decades because I think those are very dangerous places to be. And maybe as a society, we need to ask ourselves, what's a better way to celebrate the holidays that might be a more appropriate setting? And one of the first things I'd remove from the equation would be alcohol. And I don't want to sound like, you know, I'm, you know,
no.
an advocate for temperance.
Susan
I'm
B. Anthony.
Right, right. I'm anything but that. But, you know, this is really a chance to look at public workplace environments and what's appropriate in those environments. And maybe it's time to take a lunch, you know, have a pleasant, you know, midday event without any alcohol present and without the expectation of these kinds of inappropriate abuses of power, really.
It's
Very
true, because we had a professor who was busy with his Asian American assistants and students, and he would use the after-hours drinking, you know, Pauhana time to take advantage.
Mm. Yeah.
But unfortunately, they were too late to bring up the issue. But mm.
We have a couple of calls, callers waiting on the line. One is Joe from Waikoloa. Joe, can you hear me? What would you like to share?
Yes, I can.
What would you like to share? Do you have a question?
Probably a pretty unpopular stance or expression of feelings. I totally understand what's going on, and I applaud it. It's been a long time coming for women to stand up. And I believe that equality in the workplace and, you know, I definitely think that women are the stronger sex overall. But what I've been thinking about recently is being a Midwestern guy growing up, raised Southern Baptist, you respect women. You open their doors and, you know, whatever it entails. But to me, as it seems, as a male that served in the Marines and everything, I understand that in the battlefield, things aren't always equal as they should be. But whenever it comes down to equality, I get that ladies want equality just like men. So what I was thinking was that, and this is probably an unpopular stance here, but okay, the women always want a big diamond for their engagement. They want a big wedding. They want doors open for them, but they still want to be equal. And I've been in circumstances where I didn't open the door for some woman, and she gave me a stink eye. And you know, I know it's very Menini examples I'm bringing about, but they've always been classified as the fairer sex, the weaker sex, which is totally wrong. But they still want, in my eyes, to be taken care of. I mean, this isn't, not, I wouldn't necessarily be taken care of, but, you know, they want their doors open for them. They want the man to pick up the check still yet a lot of times.
Joe, I think you might be on the other side of a cultural shift there. We have another caller on the line, Mary from Kauai. Mary, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, tell me what you're thinking about, Mary.
I'm just remembering an incident when I was 13 years old. It was very unsettling, but it had nothing to do with the three brothers who were partners in the restaurant where I was a little waitress, where I was treated very well, until one night in the kitchen, I was taking back the last of the plates from my last table, and the two dishwashers let loose with a hose full of water. And I thought that the three gentlemen who employed me would kill them. And they wanted me to sit down to gather my thoughts, to get some warm tea into me, and that they would either drive me home or call my family. And as soon as they said, call my family, all I could think was, my dad is down from working all week. He's at our house at the shore, the little tiny bungalow that eight of us were crammed into. And if he sees me in this condition, if they don't kill him, he will. If they don't kill those two dishwashers, those two idiot teenage boys, he will. And I said, no, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to walk home, and I will be dry by the time I get home, and I will be calm by the time I get home. And I never told anyone. Mm-hmm. Now I want you not to cut me off or to talk over me. I want to tell you that I'm 71 years old, and I never told anybody until this year. Mm-hmm. And I want you to know that I wasn't a dumb little kid. I went and spent time at the library. I read Amy Vanderbilt. I read how you're supposed to conduct yourself, anything that my mother didn't cover because she might have been too shy, because she had her own place in the work world. She ran her fifth grade classroom for 40 years and never experienced any problems at all. but she knew that her daughters might. So I read Amy Vanderbilt, and Amy Vanderbilt and the other ladies of that time, Emily Post, always told us, what you should do is never date a teacher or a professor or your boss or anybody at your place of work. It is inappropriate. It's inappropriate for a young girl. It's inappropriate for a young lady who goes to business after high school or after college. You will be taken as a lightweight. You get there on your merits. And that is what I always did. If anybody made even a slight suggestion of, toward a compliment to me, and it was from a man older, younger, or my age, whether I was married at the time or not, I squelched it. I just looked at him and said, oh, don't kid me, and then walked away. Whether I was in the middle of my lunch or the middle of something, I would get up and leave that area of the workplace. I never had anything to do with any of these people after work. I went home after work. When I married a man who had already been told that he was going to die within 10 years. I had to get out and work. And thank goodness I had 3 years of college education, 2 years of technical school later that he put me through by taking care of our daughter. And I was well prepared. I was well prepared to do my own stint, 4 months pregnant, all night long, working alone.
Mary, I want to bring in some of the thoughts of our panel on this. And a couple of things that she just referred to have to do with generational mm-hmm, attitudes. Mm-hmm. The whole idea of being ladylike, Amy Vanderbilt, Emily Post.
Right.
Those are viewed by many as somewhat archaic concepts, mm-hmm. right?
I think I understand exactly what she's saying. I'm a Southern Belle myself. I'm from New Orleans, and I relate to exactly what you're saying. It's true that we were raised differently, and I think nowadays it's even harder for young women because they are taught that they are supposed to be equal in the workplace, and yet they see that they're not. They're paid less. And a lot of young women are not married, so they see that they have a job that they can do, and they don't know if they should accept favors from the bosses, like maybe if the boss wants to go for a drink, that's an opportunity for them to have a network and so forth. So I think the rules that apply to us growing up aren't as clear as we would wish them to be today for mm-hmm. younger women.
Yeah, I think going back to Joe, who felt like he's been sort of marooned on the on the one hand, he believes in equality of the genders, and on the other hand, do we expect the door to be opened, and what about the big diamond ring? Well, for years I taught marriage and the family, and the first thing I said to people about, is that you're in your 20s, you need to be saving for a down payment, and putting $7,000 into a ring is probably something you might want to revisit, and maybe do it later in life. So I sympathize with some of his frustrations, and with the other story that our listener was kind enough to share. I agree with Liz. She was a courageous woman. She had to deal with that at a time when we didn't have words like sexual harassment to describe what had happened to her. I think there was an absence of any kind of credible response, and so men felt like they had to just respond physically and violently to anybody who assaulted their daughter or their sister. And I think we're in a new and better world where there should be procedures in place. People don't have – I remember one of my best friends getting into a physical altercation with another guy because that was the only way he felt he could respond to a domestic violence situation, and to protect the young woman who was being assaulted. And he broke his leg in that altercation. So we need better systems in place than,
just to go back to the last caller, for me, I can't say, when you meet someone, whether you meet them at work or wherever, when you talk to people that have been together for a long time, and you ask couples, how'd you all meet, right? Some of that was in the workplace. Others was like with my wife when I was at high school, right? What we're talking about, what's inappropriate and what's not appropriate in the workplace, what's, crossing a line and violating the civil law or criminal law. But to sit there and say that it's just inappropriate for one person to fall in love with another based on their rank at the place that they're employed in, I just can't say that, right? I mean, again, most of, you know, you sit down, you talk to couples, beautiful stories about how they met. And it really doesn't matter. You know, you can't put a limit on where you're going to fall in love at. But there has to be guidelines. And I think that's what we're pointing out now. And that's the reason why we're having this conversation, because it's readily apparent, right, and way too late. I mean, it's about time that we should have these conversations, and employers have to have these conversations about what's appropriate conduct. And people have to own up to it, because you don't want, you know, when people will use racial slurs, and, you know, even in high school, my principal will come back and say things like, well, you know, Johnny's just from down there, and, you know, that's just how he was raised. And you get the same thing with these sexual allegations, right? Yeah. That's just the way men talk in the locker room. And, you know, you came here to work, and you knew you're going to be working around a bunch of men. What'd you expect, you know? Right. You know, exactly. Almost, and they normalize it, right? And it has to stop. Right.
I think. Go ahead.
Well, one question. We've been talking a lot about women being the target of unwanted advances, but what about in a situation where it's a man? You know, we saw with Kevin Spacey, the House of Cards, you know, they pulled the plug on him. So, you know, if you're in a situation where, let's say, you're a male in a female dominated industry and you're the target.
Well, of course, because sexual harassment isn't about love or romance. It's about power. Mm-hmm. And when there's a woman boss and she wants to make moves on her male employee, then you have a similar issue. It's all about power. It's just that the typical so-called sexual harassment is usually the male boss to the female employee. But, yeah, it's the same. It's the same issue, power. It's all about power.
And you can have, and in fact, there are a number of instances where it's male-on-male sexual harassment. And that's even a hidden problem, because it has to do with our homophobia that we're having to contend with as well. And people have to recognize that it is an issue and it is a problem, and the procedures need to be in place to support those victims as well.
Right. It's what's not wanted is the issue, what Ken and Mita and everyone is saying today. I was about to say also that the issue where there's a real romantic situation, getting back to what Ken was saying, where the boss, the male boss, falls in love with the female employee, and vice versa, she's in love with him, there's no doubt about it, but then something happens and goes off track. It's the employee's obligation at that point to be very, very clear that the relationship is no longer wanted. Because up to that point, the male employer has thought that it was. So she needs to either write something or text something after saying, no, we're finished. Because otherwise, it's difficult to say that that is sexual harassment.
Yeah, that could get ugly, couldn't it? Oh, my God.
It does get ugly. We've handled cases like that. It does get ugly, yeah.
Well, but you're emphasizing, Liz, making a record of it. Because, you know, one of the earlier callers talked about harassment that was strictly verbal, probably taking place when no one else was around, and therefore impossible to prove. Yeah.
Yes.
He said, she said.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, of course, in the case she described, the man was taking full advantage.
Exactly.
Who's going to believe her, right?
Right. And then also back to the male employer, for his own protection, he should say, I really want us to date, but if you no longer want to date me, I need to know it clearly, not just some innuendo. You need to tell me yes or no.
He's got to really be careful if he's.
Yes.
If this is genuine.
I'm so thankful I'm married, man. Oh my God!
It's you know, we contended with that when we did the UH policy, because we really had to cover faculty student, which is the dominant thing we're doing.
Right.
We're an educational institution, but we also are a workplace, and there are ways that you can do this, but it requires a lot of transparency to supervisors. So that we're not banning sex, we're not banning romance in complicated work settings, but in fact, we're just sort of saying, look, if you get in a romantic relationship, you're a department chair, and now you're administrative assistant, that's fine. But what we now need to do, though, is remove you from any kind of decision-making about that employee. So there's ways to do this, and there are also people that have gamed the system in the past and, you know, gotten their romantic partner promoted. And what people have to understand is that that's toxic in the work environment, because it's not just the person that this is happening to or with. It's the entire work environment. And I remember seeing situations like that where people got promoted for the wrong reason or got good grades for the wrong reason. And it's toxic. Everybody else in the class knows it's going on, and it's corrosive. So this is moving into the new world that's going to be a better world. We're going to have less racism, less sexism, and more transparency, and fewer abuses of power of any sort.
That would be great.
Mita, we're seeing so many signs every day in the paper that the world is moving in exactly the opposite direction.
Well, but I'm trying to stay in the holiday spirit. I got my holiday jewelry on. I'm staying positive.
I hear you, but that's pretty Pollyanna perspective.
Oh, I know. But it's what keeps me, cheerful. I've also seen enormous change, Chris, over time. I mean, Liz and I go back a number of decades, and it used to be that nobody, we weren't having these conversations.
Yeah,
so I really appreciate it and welcome it.
One of the things I think that's changed is simply that we have a vocabulary for it.
Yeah,
exactly.
For it, right?
Right.
That really has an awful lot to do with it, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yes. Before, there was no such thing as sexual harassment. It was, even though we had the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the sexual harassment didn't come about as a term until the 80s.
And actually, the whole issue of male-female discrimination was notably absent from the Civil Rights Bill.
Well, the Civil Rights Act, the Southerners tried to kill it by including sex in the act.
Knowing the Northerners wouldn't go for it.
Right, because they wanted to support basically discrimination against women.
Yeah.
And it was a few courageous Democrats who said, no, let's accept this and let's go forward with trying to include both racism and sexism together. So these are twin evils that we do need to, exercise from our lives.
One thing I want to point out is that there are companies that are out there and have already instituted sexual harassment training, whether it's something you look at online and every year you have to say, yes, you went through the training and you understand, what harassment is, because I think in a lot of places they don't know what harassment is.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Right. But I take Liz's point because I went through the UH forced march through the computer, and I don't think it's particularly effective. And I really think that in person, where we can have these conversations, where people can be told not just, go to X number, office, but have the person whose office you're supposed to be calling there in the room with you, that those are much more important and much more sincere efforts. We're not in the business of checking boxes. We're in the business of transforming a workplace.
Are we transforming the workplace? Are we transforming society? Have we passed that tipping point we talked about at the beginning of the show? We've got a few minutes left. I want to sort of throw this out. Where are we now?
Well, like they keep saying, it's a reckoning. I think it's a major shift as far as sexual harassment. As was pointed out earlier, women are now believed. Before they weren't, before we had a slut defense. There's no more a slut defense.
Really? That's not going to work anymore?
Not like it used to. No, not at all.
But one thing that I found going back to that, though, is, when we look at what happened in Alabama, when you have a lot of white women still voting for a guy who has molested children, et cetera, saying basically, the governor, she said, guess what? I believe the women when they say that they were harassed by this guy, Roy Moore, right? But still, I'd rather vote for him than a Democrat. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that's almost like, I don't know. It's just,
so it's
there's a reckoning, but there's also, people that are lagging behind, especially when you're talking about women.
Well, that's Alabama and Trump supporters. Shall we go there?
It's implied.
Lucky you live Hawaii.
but you're right. But I think also that wasn't the workplace. That was politics. I think there is a shift in the workplace.
But whether it's the workplace or politics, the view was still the same, that somehow that I can normalize this guy doing this to women, right? And to girls and justify and
it was amazing.
Yeah,
but he lost. So let's take encouragement from that. But it was suburban women, I think, and men who said, no, this is not a world we want to live in where we can just walk right past all those credible allegations.
Well, it was predominantly black women.
Yeah.
Well, and that's let's kudos to them and the courage that they expressed in this. Yeah, I felt like we were seeing both the civil rights movement and the women's movement merge in Alabama in a powerful and wonderful way.
I think it has at least as much to do with one as it does with the other.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's so embedded in the culture. And Ken, you referred to something earlier when you were saying you and I, a generation apart, grew up as males in America with a little bit of the idea that, oh, the first time you ask, the girl's going to say no. She's just being coy, right?
Yeah.
So that's a pretty deep embedding of not taking what a woman says to you seriously.
Right.
Yes.
Fair to say?
Fair to say. That's what we were talking about earlier, that now if a woman says no, then a man has to be asked one more time, are you really sure it's no? Do I need to pursue this? Or do you not want me to pursue you at all? It's hard. It's hard now for men if they're interested in a woman in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Yep. Well, we don't want to discourage anybody, but
no means no. That's
no
what we have to
mean. No, and unfortunately, 12 o'clock means 12 o'clock. Come to the end of our program. I'd like to thank my co-host Catherine Cruz, and our guest Elizabeth Fujiwara, an attorney at Fujiwara and Rosenbaum, who specializes in civil rights, employment discrimination, and whistleblower protection; Ken Lawson, co-director of the Hawaii Innocence Project and an associate faculty specialist at the William S. Richardson School of Law; and Mita Chesney Lynn, chair of the Department of Women's Studies. That's our program for today. Tomorrow, we'll discuss the possibility of using state law to ensure net neutrality. If you didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, you can still call our talk back line. This is obviously an ongoing discussion we're going to be having. Leaving us your comments. We'll play those comments later this week on our program. That number is 808-792-8217.
You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. If you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz.
And I'm Chris Vandercook. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.